He was going to have a cigarette.
Well, we don't want to interrupt those tax dollars going to the state, so we'll go ahead and do a vote hearing on House Bill 2650. I'll open that. Steve, if you can tell us what we're doing and what we're fixing.
Okay, House Bill 2650, you should have at least three documents related to that. One is the revenue impact statement. Another is a one-page labeled House Bill 2650 with a chart at the top and then a dash one amendment. House Bill 2650 tries to make some corrective changes to legislation that was passed in the third special session. In that special session, the legislature reduced the state school fund by $211 million. And as the alternative to help school districts handle that, school districts were, and ESDs were allowed to accrue revenue from one year, from the next year into the current year.
Steve, this is lovingly known as the shifts.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
A few other phrases, I think. You said shift, didn't you?
Yeah, said shift.
And the way that was handled, that the school districts were allowed to accrue 9.1% of their state school fund dollars for that year, and that was to be equivalent to about the $211 million. Actually, for just school districts and ESDs, it was $210 million. Because the 211 included money for youth corrections and juvenile detention, okay, which didn't have accrual authority. So that was added up to about 210, and then using that 9.1%, as the state school fund decreased after the third special session, that 9.1% of a smaller state school fund meant a smaller statewide accrual limit. Okay. And so the bill here basically sets up a calculation to try to restore it to the full $210 million for 0203. And the way that's done, it sets up a specific number, $309 per weighted student for K-12 school districts and then $12 for education service districts. So it makes it specific only for 0203, so that if there's any further changes in the state school fund level in 0203, it won't affect the accrual limit. Okay. And then statewide, that should add up to about the $210 million, although the ADMW still isn't final for that year. The second part of the bill, then, in terms of ongoing out after 0203, it makes that accrual calculation to be taking 1/12 of the state school fund, whatever the appropriation level is for that fiscal year, divides that by the total ADMW statewide for all the school districts to get a dollar amount per weighted student. And then each district's accrual amount is their ADMW times that statewide average. So that all districts then will have the same amount per weighted student that they can accrue for their limit. The problem with the way it's drafted now is that since it's 9.1% of the state school fund dollars for each district, some districts have state school fund dollars that are a high percent of their state and local dollar total. Other districts have a low percent or ratio, and so that the amount can vary rather dramatically from district to district as to what that accrual amount can be per weighted student. The other thing that the bill does is to make a correction to the ESD calculation on their per weighted student dollar amount. It includes the same number both separately and in a total number, so that's corrected. And let's see, I think that about covers it. The one thing to be clear of, though, from the chart is that the accrual amount per ADMW will fluctuate as the state school fund fluctuates. So there's no guarantee that the accrual amount in a year one or year two from 0203 will be as much as it is in 0203.
Okay, that's it?
Other than the amendment.
Okay, other than the amendment. Yeah. You want to start with the amendment?
At the dash one amendment, a part of the calculation, the bill says to use the state school fund level at the close of the regular session, so that any subsequent special session reductions would not affect the 1/12 calculation. The Dash 1 amendment also includes any reductions relating to the allotting of funds by the Department of Administrative Services, so that if there was an across-the-board cut done by order of the governor, that would not be included as well. That would not adjust the close of session appropriation level downward.
So Steve, this is all basically technical amendments to the shift that we established in the special session last year. And Steve's got an emergency clause because this has to be done in time for the accrual to occur in May.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Let's hear some more on this. Ozzie Rose, I think you're the only one signed up.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I have very little to say. I'm only signed up to be sure that you understand we support this. It needs to be done, notwithstanding what an individual business manager might have told one or two of you.
Have we heard from any individual?
Well, you must have. Not everybody likes this, but it is important that we do it.
Well, okay, tell us why. We agree. Tell us why.
A lot of folks don't like the accrual. It's not a shift. It's accrual because it's not consistent with what they believe good bookkeeping.
But that decision was made in the
right, and I just don't want. This is necessary. It's $200 or $200 million for the program for kids, and I just want to be sure that you know it's supported.
All right. Yeah, I mean that's a good point. I mean the argument about the accrual really
it's
was
old.
Last year's argument.
It's
this
old.
Is
yeah. right.
this is technical in making sure that it
yes.
works the way we intended it
yes.
to work.
Yes.
For better or for worse, in
yes.
the last series of special sessions, Representative
yes.
Virgin.
Yes, Ozzie, it's optional. I mean, the district can do it or not do it. So you have maybe half the districts saying they'd like to do the shift and the other half saying they don't want to. I mean, doesn't that kind of temper the argument a little bit?
Ms. Chair, if I heard you, what you said is correct. It tempers it, but not with those with real strong feelings.
Okay, Representative Barnhart.
That's following up on that, Mr. Chair, and the district could take part of it
yes.
if they wanted to instead of all of it, could they not?
Mr. Chair, yes. This is local control at its best.
Well, Ozzie, I'm going to confess that I probably would not be able to describe the technical elements of this bill in a conversation over coffee. Have you looked at them? Are you satisfied that they work?
Ms. Chair, I've looked at them, and Nancy Heilig has looked at them, so I know they're okay.
Okay. All right.
Steve did them, so I...
Yeah, well, I just wanted to hear that from one other person this morning, since I don't have a lot of confidence in myself on a bill as technical as this. Other questions of Ozzie? Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else wish to testify? Okay. Ozzie, can you carry this? All right. Let's close the public hearing on House Bill 2650. And, folks, this really is a must-have so that the accrual works. And we do have a deadline approaching us to get this out to the districts so it will work for them in time for the May distribution and accrual. So let me go right to work session on this, unless there's some strong objection and somebody wants to take more time on this. But I'll open the work session. Let's see if we're ready to go. We have the Dash 1 amendments before us.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hass.
I move we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2650.
Representative Hass moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2650. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Bill?
Mr. Chair, I move we pass 2650 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hass moves House Bill 2650 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Again, committee, I know is as hard to get around as this bill is. I'd normally be happy to let it sit for a little while longer, but we do have to get it moving. So if everyone is willing to trust the good work of staff and Ozzie and Nancy Heiligman, who is from the Department of Ed and manages the administration of the State School Fund, I'm willing to go on their say-so on this. So if everybody else is okay, let's call the roll.
Representatives Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Pat?
Aye.
Hobson?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Chair Shetterly?
Aye. House Bill 26, was it 50?
50.
50 goes to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Representative Barnhart, you said you would pass.
I was just going to make a comment, Mr. Chair, that I oppose strongly the shift, but I do understand the need to,
okay,
as long as it's law changing, so I don't mind that.
Okay. Well, but Barnhart?
I'll carry the bill, and I'll make the comment on the floor that I also opposed the shift, but this bill is necessary to put into effect what the legislature did last time.
Okay. No, I appreciate that. That's a good perspective on it. All right. Barnhart will be the carrier. Okay, next, let's go to our biennial visit from forestry and the forest industry. Good to see you all here. Let's open a hearing on House Bill 2195. Come on up. Sure, we'll get the, I guess, or Dick, how long are you going to be on your short? Okay. Committee, this is one that we do every 2 years. And it does have a subsequent to Ways and Means because it all fits within budget. You guys are going through three committees. Do you always go through three committees?
We did last time.
Is that right? I knew we've done revenue and Ways and Means. I didn't realize that it
was
three last time, too, because you've already been to Ag and Natural Resources.
That's correct. Okay.
Now, by the time you get to Ways and Means, you'll really have it down.
Yes.
Dick.
Morning, Mr. Chair. Dick Gates with Legislative Revenue. House Bill 2195, as you mentioned, sets the forest products harvest tax rates for two calendar years, 2004 and 2005. It sets the rate at a blank in this case because, as you mentioned, the rate is determined in connection with the budget, which is set for either the Oregon State University with respect to the Forest Research Laboratory or the Department of Forestry with respect to the Forest Practices Act. So both of those rates are blank. The other thing that the bill does is to delete a 15-cent rate that was last imposed in 2001 for the service foresters to non-industrial private forest land. Since that could not be deleted last session because it was in effect for the 2001 calendar year, it's now extraneous and is being deleted. And as a result, you get several sections there where the section references are changed to match the deletion of that one section. So the bill takes effect January 1, 2004.
Okay. I guess just by way of background, Dick, for those who haven't been through this bill before, we have the Forest Harvest Privilege Tax. That's the measure summary. It says that supports the OSU Forest Research Lab.
Yes.
And the Department of Forestry Administration of the Forest Practices Act. That's what we're supporting here with this tax.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, gentlemen. Whoever wants to go first.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Shetterly and members of the committee. I'm Clark Seeley with the Department of Forestry. I'm the Assistant State Forester for Administrative Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2195 this morning. As Mr. Yates indicated, the bill amends ORS 321.015 and a couple of other relating statutes to establish the Oregon Forest Products harvest tax rates for calendar years 2004 and 2005 to support the operations of the Department of Forestry's Forest Practices Program and the Oregon State University Forest Research Laboratory. For the Department of Forestry, these harvest tax funds are combined with general funds in a 60-40 ratio, 60% general fund, 40% harvest tax. And that's a statutory ratio that is established and represents and maintains the concept of a shared responsibility for Oregon's forest environment between forest landowners and operators through the harvest tax and the general public through the general fund. The tax rates are established on a per thousand board foot harvest basis, and for the Department of Forestry, they're calculated based on three factors. One is we consider the current biennium's ending balance of harvest tax revenue, so we'll consider where we end up on June 30th of this biennium of 0103. We also then have to look ahead, of course, to the 0305 biennial budget for the department, and that's the second factor that weighs in on the calculation. And then the third factor is the forecasted harvest levels in the state for the biennial period. And as shown in attachment one of my testimony, that gives you a picture of the overall harvest levels in the state over the last nearly 40 years. And you can see that principally in the last decade or so, harvest levels have declined due to reduced harvest levels on federal lands. The forest products harvest tax applies to all harvest in the state, including federal harvests on Forest Service or Bureau of Land Management lands, with the one exception of harvests on reservation lands of Indian reservation lands in the state. Attachment 2 then shows you a picture of the biennial rates for the forest products harvest tax over the last six cycles, and over on the right-hand side shows you the current rates in this biennium for 0103. The harvest tax is collected by the Department of Revenue, and on a quarterly basis, the appropriate receipts are transferred to the Department of Forestry. And at this time, we still have one of eight quarterly turnovers to come into the department for this biennium, and that'll occur in the middle of May, and then that'll be the last turnover for this biennium, and we'll know then at that point what our total revenue is for this biennium. And then, as I mentioned before, in addition to the revenue consideration for this biennium, our budget development for 0305 is another consideration, and really necessitates kind of a concurrent consideration of this bill ultimately with our budget bill, House Bill 5022, during the process. Because the rates are dependent upon both ending balance and budget, that's the reason for the blanks in the bill, and we would suggest that that rates not yet be inserted in the bill. It's still somewhat premature, and although that extends the time of consideration of the bill over the legislative process, it does ensure that the rates are as accurate as they can be, considering what the final budget decisions are and the final accounting for revenues. We think that our current rate for this biennium for the Department of Forestry is 91 cents per thousand board feet harvested, and we believe that probably the rate for the next biennium and for these two calendar years will be similar to that. We don't anticipate any significant increases, nor really any big downward changes either. So we anticipate that it'll be pretty close to the 91 cent rate currently. In summary, we support the bill and be glad to answer any questions of the committee.
Okay. Questions? Representative Berger?
I have two questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. How do the fires influence any projections of harvest? And a second question is, in your research, are you looking at what happens after a huge fire like the Biscuit Fire, and what can be done with salvage and with other things, please?
Okay. All right. Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, both excellent questions. Let me take the first question first. In general, I think the answer in terms of salvage harvest after fire damage differs a little bit depending on the ownership. Private landowners tend generally to get in and harvest as soon as they can so that they don't lose any value in the wood with natural deterioration. And that's what we're seeing, of course, this winter from a number of the private landowners who did have fires from this past summer. The federal lands are a different story, and to a great extent, because of the legal constraints that are part of the national system, their ability to get in and harvest quickly is somewhat hampered, and they also are limited to some extent in the areas where they can conduct salvage harvest. And in those areas because of land classification, are off limits to harvesting in general, they're also typically off limits to harvesting for salvage from fire as well. We estimate the harvest volume for next biennium at just shy of 7 billion board feet for the state that would be a part of the harvest tax. That's just up slightly, a very small amount from what we saw and will see for this biennium. And I think that the what typically happens is, again, particularly on private lands, is that when fires do occur and a landowner does conduct a salvage harvest, they typically are not adding that to additional harvest that they normally would have planned for their ownership for that year, but they are substituting. And so typically they'll come in and harvest fire-killed timber in lieu of harvesting green timber, and keeping the green timber on the stump growing and gaining in value. So it's more of a replacement rather than an addition in terms of the volume harvested. And that's a generalization, but I think that's probably the case overall. The second question related to harvest off of federal lands this year, I think what I'd be glad to do, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is the department is developing a summary of timber impacts of this past fire season for a number of other committees actually right now, and our planning staff is in the midst of working on that, and I'd be glad to provide that to the committee, and that I think that'll in part answer your question, Representative Verger. I think, again, the Biscuit Fire, as an example, in southern Oregon this past year, the fire burned about 500,000 acres of national forest land, principally the Siskiyou National Forest. A large majority of that was the Calmiopsis Wilderness Area, which, again, by land classification, did not have timber harvesting as a part of its land management. And therefore, much of what was burned in that fire in the wilderness area probably will not be salvaged. But we can provide more detail and more data to the committee, and glad to do that.
Mr. Chair, I would be very interested in that. I don't know about other members of the committee, but I would certainly be interested in that.
Thank you.
Be glad to do that.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you. Mr. Seeley, on your attachment 2, would you explain to me, who is not up to speed on forestry, what OFLPF stands for and OFRI stands for?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Berger, the acronyms flow freely, the OFLPF is the acronym or abbreviation for the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, and this is a fund established by statute with a series of revenue sources, harvest tax being one, that exists to cover the costs of fire suppression for fires that go beyond kind of the local district fire department's capability, the large fires that go beyond that capability and become true emergencies in that sense. This fund exists, again, as a source of dollars to cover the suppression costs of those types of fires. And harvest tax is one revenue source for that fund. The OFRI is the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. It's a body that was established by the legislature in 1991, I believe. It principally serves as an educational and public awareness, public communications organization. It's governed by a board of directors that are elected from landowners, forest landowners across the state, and it's an institute that's managed by a small staff in Portland. their sole source of funding, besides donations that they do receive, but their sole source of funding is the Oregon Forest Products Harvest Tax, and so they exist on the harvest tax principally.
Yes, sure.
For my information, if this rate is set by this statute, the overall rate, what mechanism then decides which one of these are funded at what rate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, that's a good question. If you take a look at Attachment 2, and let's just use the 2001-03 bar on the far right-hand side as an example, House Bill 2195 affects two of those four components. Okay. It affects the Department of Forestry's Forest Practices Program, which is the 91 cents at the bottom of that bar, mm-hmm. and it affects the Oregon State University Forest Research Laboratory, shown as OSU on this chart, and that's the top piece, the 67 cents of the top piece of the bar. The two middle pieces, the lower one is the 50 cents rate for the Emergency Fire Fund that we just talked about, the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. And that rate is actually set in statute in the same series of statutes, but it doesn't have a sunset or a renewal clause in the statute. And so it's just set at 50 cents, and it'll stay there until you amend it, if you do, but it's not looked at periodically or at least biennially, and just exists. The 79-cent rate is the Oregon Forest Research Institute rate, and this was their rate at the beginning of this biennium of 2001-03. Now, the Institute is a little bit different in that statutorily, when the Institute was established in 91, they were given the authority within statute to essentially establish their own rate on an administrative basis. And the statute set a ceiling in 1991 that was inflation adjusted or could be inflation adjusted over the years. And their rate could never go above that ceiling amount, inflation adjusted. And so their board of directors each year looks at their budget and looks at their revenue needs and either changes or doesn't change their rate. But they have the ability statutorily to do that. They did just increase their rate this calendar year, 2003. And I want to say that they increased the rate upwards of 20 cents. I believe that may not be the exact number, but they're currently in the neighborhood of 99 cents per thousand board feet for the Institute.
So looking at the 0103 bar, this bill only addresses the top and the bottom pieces of the total funding.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Other questions, Dick?
I guess I'd just add to that that the forest rate of 50 cents is not necessarily fixed. The state forester does have authority, first of all, to lower that to zero if the balance in the Forest Land Protection Fund meets the minimum balance.
That's a good point.
$25 million, or what's the minimum?
It's currently $15 million.
$15 million. So if the fund reaches that balance, the rate goes to zero for the next calendar year. Also, if there is an emergency which exhausts the fund, the forester has authority to raise this rate.
But in any event, that's outside this bill.
That's clear.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Scott.
Cash. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The ending balance, if those are outside, what is the projected ending balance and what causes that to occur?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, we are at this point projecting that we'll have somewhere around $1 million ending balance in harvest tax revenue for this biennium. And the reason for that is that because of this statutory connection between harvest tax and general fund, if the general fund amount that we have available appropriated to spend in our regular budget is reduced, which it has been this biennium, then we also have to bring that matching revenue level or expenditure level for harvest tax down accordingly, because they go in tandem. And we can never spend, the statute says that we can never spend more than 40% of the forest practices program by harvest tax. And so there's, the general fund is actually the constraining factor there. If the general fund, again, is reduced, then we can't go spend more harvest tax. Now, the tax rate that was established continues, of course, to be in place. Landowners continue to harvest, continue to pay that tax, so we continue to get the revenue in harvest tax, but it sits in the account, and we can't spend it statutorily, again, if the general fund has brought the overall expenditure level down. So the key, though, I think, is that we take that then into consideration in calculating the rate for the next biennium. So we don't just simply start at zero, but we consider what ending balance we may have in the fund. Now, the amount that we have this biennium is unusually high because we have had the reductions in the forest practices general fund throughout the course of the biennium. We may, four or five biennia ago, we were typically carrying an ending balance of between $100,000 and $200,000 of harvest tax. And the reason why there is any ending balance, if there is simply a matter of our ability to forecast harvest levels over a two-year period and then what really happens in terms of harvest. We try to be as accurate as possible, but obviously it's not a perfect science.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good discussion. Let's hear from OSU.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Hobbs, and I'm Associate Dean for Research for the College of Forestry and Associate Director of the Forest Research Laboratory at Oregon State University. Hal Salwasser, Dean of the College and Director of the Forest Research Lab, would have liked to have been here this morning, and obviously I'm representing him here and presenting his testimony on his behalf. He is, in fact, in Washington, D.C. this morning trying to raise money to do the kind of fire research that Representative Berger was asking a question about earlier this morning. Really appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 2195. House Bill 2195 establishes the forest products harvest tax rates for the calendar years 2004-2005 in support of programs of the Forest Research Laboratory at Oregon State University. Now, as a revenue source, the harvest tax is directly linked to the FRL biennial budget and is judiciously used by scientists at the FRL to carry out the laboratory's significant programs of forest and forest products research and technology development, usually leveraging other sources of revenue for that work. And I might add that that leverage factor is about 1 to 5. So for every dollar in harvest tax money, there's usually another $5 brought in from outside sources other than state money. While the FRL 2003-2005 biennial budget is still uncertain, we are able to determine that a continued tax rate for the laboratory of 67 cents per thousand board feet for calendar 04 and 05 will provide a level of stability in preserving ongoing research initiatives at the Forest Research Lab. Now, given anticipated harvest levels in the state, which Clark has already addressed, this will allow the FRL to maintain a program close to our most recent biennial service level. Should the harvest level be lower than expected, we will work to find additional revenues to maintain our service level. Should it be higher, we will establish a reserve account to cover expenses in future years or work with the Oregon's forest industries to invest the extra revenues in high priority projects, research projects. In summary, the Forest Research Lab supports House Bill 2195 and welcomes the opportunity to work with a committee to complete the bill as the revenue and budget processes move forward. Thank you for your time and consideration. Be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Are there more questions, Representative? Oh, you look like you were just pregnant with a question.
Well, I am, Mr. Chair. You're very perceptive.
Then deliver.
Thank you. I'm asking a question of the wrong person, I think. And so if I am, I let's switch. In line 23 of the bill, there's a reference to the amount you referred to, not to exceed 40% of the total expenditure approved by the Legislative Assembly. This looks like an old political compromise around a funding formula of balancing of general funds against a specific tax or fee. I'm wondering if it makes any sense, given our current fiscal problem, to reopen that discussion and change these 40% to some other number. Or is that a can of worms that we should stay away from?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, reference that you point out on the first page of the bill is the statutory linkage and connection that I was referring to between harvest tax and general fund. The 60-40 ratio has been in place. The Forest Practices Act was established by the legislature in 1971, and this ratio and approach to funding has been in place, I would say, at least since 1975. We funded the first few years of the Forest Practices Act administration through a separate direct general fund appropriation and then a permit fee for the notification process of operations, logging operations. But this approach was established, I believe, in the mid-70s. Again, it attempts to represent both the public and private landowner values and benefits that are being protected and recognized in the Forest Practices Act. There has been discussion over the years whether 60% general fund, 40% harvest tax is the right balance or the right mix. I think that folks can have opinions one way or another on that. We wouldn't propose to open the discussion at this point for the ratio, but it certainly could be a consideration in terms of the general fund availability and the approach in terms of funding the program. It might be something that the forest landowner community would be interested in commenting on as well.
Well, and just to comment, the reason I raised the question at all is knowing that it's obviously related to an old political compromise is that we're likely to be faced, not this committee, but the Ways and Means Committee is likely to be faced with some very serious budgetary decisions to be made in dealing with the general fund.
Sure. You bet. Very good.
Representative Bridger.
Just to kind of maybe present a different picture, perhaps the harvest levels could be greater, and then that would probably produce more money going into the state coffers rather than changing the formula.
Is that a motion?
I'm tempted. I would follow up, please. I would like to just ask you to comment on maybe something that is not just exactly with this bill, but I'm very curious about it, and that is when we see the level of trees that you're talking about, 05, and in the future that are to be harvested, is it your feeling that Oregon as a state is capable of harvesting the amount of trees that need to be harvested in order to keep this kind of program going?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, I think that the answer to your question probably has several facets. One is the biological potential of forests and trees to grow and produce wood, and within the concept of modern forestry where we try to achieve a harvest level that is sustainable over time, the sustained yield concept where we're not cutting heavier today to jeopardize the potential for the future. And Steve may want to comment on this far better than I, but I believe based on the current research and look at Oregon's forest land base and the capability of that land base, we are well at approximately 6 or 7 billion board feet per biennium We are well within the biological capability of sustained harvest over time. So there's no, again, we're talking here in terms of the total harvest level across all ownerships, but I don't believe that we're anywhere near the maximum biological potential in terms of harvest levels. I think then the other question is, or the other part of the question relates to then landowners' management objectives and both private as well as government ownerships, and where those landowner objectives then place the harvest of timber and the value of timber or wood in the mix of all the other forest values that a landowner may be managing for. And of course, with governmental lands, those values are essentially established by law or by statute. For private landowners, they're looking at either in the case of an industrial ownership, the shareholders and stakeholders' directives and objectives, and in the case of non-industrial landowners, individual objectives. So I think there's a varying level of harvest anticipation in the case of ownerships based on their objectives. Is that get close or begin to approach?
It gets close. I just guess that the thing that has bothered me for a long time is that I think people need to do the things that they do best. I think we all make those kind of decisions in our life, that we try to do the things and stay within, whether it's a career or what, or where we want to live. And we make those choices based on what we do best. And in my opinion, one of the things that Oregon does best is grow trees. So
I agree.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Committee, this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, so...
Well. He's shaking his head.
Oh.
No?
Oh, it doesn't? Why did 2650 have a subsequent when I have a note and 2195 doesn't when I have a note that says 2195 does and I don't have a note that says 2650
does? It should.
It should, yeah. So we want to make that as part of the motion.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Let me close the public hearing on House Bill 2195 and open a work session. Is there any discussion with that, Representative Berger?
Yeah, Mr. Please explain to me the process here. Why is this coming to us and then going to Ways and Means?
Because it involves a imposition of a tax. And the amount of the tax, though, is determined according to the budget requirement that has to coordinate with Ways and Means. And so it just makes this trip through the Revenue Committee because it does involve a tax. The other answer is tradition.
Okay. I mean, we can't, if I could, the rate we don't set.
That's right.
So... Our role here is to...
Our role, I think, is biennially to have the discussion on the policy, basically, of the imposition of the tax for the support of the programs that it funds, since those are based on, or those are funded by this revenue source. So we have that policy discussion. We keep tabs of it every 2 years. But you're right. In this case, the actual dollar amount is set by Ways and Means because it has to coordinate with the budget for the department and for the OSU program. So ours is really, in this case, more the policy discussion, just keeping that in front of the Revenue Committee for those purposes, than it is for actually setting the rate of the revenue.
And so the motion is to go to Revenue?
Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
Yeah, as I understand, this bill did not have, it usually does, doesn't it? It usually has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It does not. But if I may, the chair would move House Bill 2195 be referred to Ways and Means directly. Paul? With the due pass, yeah. Okay, let's make this the motion then to the floor of the due pass, but with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And that way it'll go to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation before it goes to the floor. Satisfied with that? Okay. Any discussion? Then please call the roll.
Representative Farhart?
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Farr.
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Williams.
Aye.
Chairman.
House Bill 2195, don't go anywhere, committee, for a second here, goes to the floor with a due pass, the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Now, we neglected to pick up that 2650 did have a referral to Ways and Means on it.
Mr.
So,
Chair?
Yes.
Did that add me to carrier?
No, since it's going to Ways and Means. Thanks, Kathy. So, let's, if I may, the chair would request unanimous consent that we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2650 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, any objection? Okay. That bill is now before us, and the motion on this one also would be to the floor with a due pass recommendation with subsequent referral by prior referral to Ways and Means, since that one did have a subsequent on it that I just neglected to pick up on. The
is it supposed to go to Ways and Means?
Yeah, it surprised me, and in fact, I asked Paul to double check on it. Do you want to clarify?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did talk with Legislative Fiscal Office about it. They had flagged it as a subsequent to Ways and Means because the way that that a final number comes out in terms of its calculation will influence the final budget they put together for 0305. And there were some issues that they had with DAS and how it was interpreted. So they wanted that to be part of that state school fund appropriation process.
And I will be sending a memo today to the co-chairs and to Ken Russell, signaling this bill is coming down to them and asking for early action on this because of the time requirements that we're under with this bill. So I'll follow up on that. So with that, then, the motion would be to the floor of the due pass, but with subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion on the motion, then, as it's before us? If not, Kathy, please call the roll. Kathy? Kathy?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Williams.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair Shannon.
Aye. Okay, so House Bill 2650 then will take a detour to Ways and Means before it goes to the floor. Representative Barnhart, I apologize.
Well, life is, you know.
Okay, with that then, we'll close the work on House Bill 2650, and I think that takes care of our work for the day. Thank you, everybody.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.